Unknown podcast, where I, Joe Stanley, am joined by fabulous but unknown people to discuss the unknown news, events, things that are exciting, that don't get mainstream coverage. And we give them the coverage they deserve. That's what we're here for. Joining me today is the delightful but stupidly unknown, although perhaps he should be more known, Jeremy Kahn. Hi, Jez.
Hello, Joe. It's Jeremy here.
It's Jeremy right in front of me. Jez, just to give you, well, the people listening, some context about you.
Yeah.
Tell me, I don't want to limit you to your role, of course, because you're so much more than that.
But thank you. As beings we are.
Yeah, we are. What is your role? You work on Hamish and Andy.
Yeah. I'm executive digital producer, which means I run all the digital world. So I film them, take photos of them, travel where they go, and grab content out for their digital world, for the internet, for their Facebook page, their social media.
Yeah, okay.
And their website.
All right. So you like a video whiz, you yeah. know, sketches.
Yeah. Or just, you yeah. know, mainly
stunts.
Videos. Yeah, stunts. just a fun capturer. Any fun they have, I try to capture it and represent it. Their style online.
Sure. So do they give you notice when they go, hey, we're going to do some fun here? Or do you just have to be there all the time like some kind yeah. of crazy reality TV?
Yeah, be there all the time. But the best stuff usually comes spontaneously.
Yeah.
And so you've got to always be on your toes, ready to capture it or ready to move with it. But yeah, we plan bits and bobs as well. Oh, this might be fun to do. But then usually when it takes flight in all sorts of other directions as it happens, particularly as the nature of live radio, as you know. Like if it changes direction, sometimes we come up with an idea for a show on the show, go to air, and then instantly just change course and then drop every other break in the radio show just to follow a journey.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So you've got to be ready to change. But that's what I love about it, the spontaneity.
Does it feel a bit like a dance though? So you got to kind of be there as it's happening. Like what if you missed a shot? The
yeah,
crucial money shot.
That's what I get anxiety about. Is, yeah,
do you?
Yeah. And there's been a bunch of times where we've like been pranking Grumpy Dave, or so, not pranking, you know, like stitching him up.
Yeah.
And and I hadn't rolled the whole time. Like, so there's a few videos of me on YouTube not pressing or getting caught by Grumpy Dave when I'm running out of the office, and I leave it too last minute to button on the hidden cameras, and then he sees me skipping out of his office. So I'm not always perfect, but the guys are incredibly forgiving, which makes me want to do better for them anyway, because they're what are the lessons learned? How can we better it next time?
Yeah.
As opposed to you idiot.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
They've never said you idiot to you.
No, I felt like an idiot a bunch of times, but no.
You also though at that time, because you're filming it, and I think people who are behind the camera are really privileged, because you get the opportunity to focus really in on someone. And if you're a good camera operator or DOP, or what do you describe yourself? Videographer?
Yeah,
whatever.
Anything.
The dude with the camera. But if you're good at that, you need to be able to really identify human emotion and focus on that.
React,
don't you reckon?
To it.
So that then means you see them perhaps at a vulnerable space where other people don't see.
Yeah, I guess so. Because, yeah, you get intimate and close up into their reactions of each other. And part of our filming style is to be like as though I'm reacting to what they're doing, so moving around, panning out. But I think that's just the style they've naturally cultivated, because it's what the way they want to make content, I guess.
Yeah, but have you witnessed them...
Wait, sorry,
terrified?
Yeah.
Broken down?
Well, we've been in some crazy places together. Like, the funness of, particularly when we're on the road, when we're outside of, like, oh, tall ship adventure, when we sailed across Bass Strait, there's 55 knot winds, 10 meter swell, like pretty much a hurricane, and all the crew were crying and puking. It was terrifying. It was truly terrifying. But the highlight for me was when me, Haim, and Tim were filming Haim on top deck when in the peak of the storm, when we're keeling right over, water rushing up to our chest.
Oh my god!
Sea level water.
Yeah.
And just cheering like we're on a roller coaster. It was just exhilarating, like conquering that. There's some footage captured from that just are in the memory banks forever.
I think too, the thing that is really special about them is they know what their uniqueness is, and they're always so consistent with that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Mm. How do you think they know that? Is that an instinctual thing? Have they defined that before they've gone into it?
Yeah, I think they're very aware. I guess I don't feel like we talk about it a lot. We talk about the biggest thing is just maintaining and having fun. I think a big filter is we got to be excited by this idea.
Yeah.
And a lot of entertainers or talent aren't genuinely excited by what they're doing.
Yes.
And that shows like nothing else. And I think that, I mean, and as a team, our biggest filter is, again, I don't post anything on social unless I feel like we're all genuinely excited, but especially the boys are genuinely excited. So.
Well, that, I find that very inspirational as far as from a creative point of view. Don't do something if you're not excited by
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
What a fantastic mantra.
Yeah, totally.
To live by.
I think it's because the entertainment industry or the media, it breeds a need to create something that isn't authentic because you have this expectation on yourself. I don't know what it is, to be honest, but I feel like there's an unhealthy mentality and a healthy perpetual cycle in a lot of business, in a lot of the world, culturally, really, that manifests a bad way, an unhealthy way of thinking.
Well, I feel like it's a risk aversion. Like Hamish and Andy are willing to take risks. And I think in just endemic everywhere you go, whether it's business or entertainment industry, media,
that's
whatever,
true.
People are frightened to take risks. And so therefore you don't really get a lot of mediocrity.
Yeah, that's true.
And taking risks, you're going to get a lot of shit that is produced, but you're going to get some amazing things as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you figure it out quickly.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay, so that's that. Now I need to know an unknown thing about you, Jeremy Khan.
Unknown thing about me?
Something unknown.
I was Christian until I was 25. I was very religious until I was 25.
Do you know I was too?
Was you?
Yeah, I was. I sang in the church band.
Yeah, right. Yeah. In the band, very rock and roll.
Well,
like the choir?
It was a band. Like it was a youth church.
Right.
So I sang in the band that led the singing on a Sunday night in the youth service.
At least that's cool. I didn't do anything cool in my church.
Why not?
I don't know, because I wasn't in a band. No. I was in a punk rock band in the UK, but that's like outside of church. But yeah, I did that till I was 25.
Yeah.
And then I stopped because I was like, I want something bigger than this.
Interestingly though, I don't know, and we've hit God already, which is, you know, very early in the piece.
We should have hit it on the first conversation, if you ask me.
Maybe. Okay. Well, I think, I still kind of consider myself Christian, too, in as much as I believe in a Judeo-Christian God.
Yeah.
But I've no interest in going to church, really.
Yeah.
And
then you came to that conclusion on your own. Did you leave or what was that?
I stopped going to church because I also was going to university and living a lifestyle that perhaps was inconsistent with going to church.
Yes, good.
I think perhaps there was some hypocrisy there.
Yeah.
And I thought, you can't sort of live a lie like that.
No.
And I'm much more interested in the parties and, you know, crazy
As you
whatever.
Should. You've got to experiment, got to figure these things out.
Yeah. So that's why I stopped. What about you?
It was at the end of Caravan of Courage, actually, one of the America, and I was in LA, and I had this connection with some girl that I was like, man, I feel like she's doing all the things I want to do, and it felt guilty to do all my life, in a lot of senses of the word, from career to sex to anything. And then I was like, I just had a huge conviction, feeling like I'm gonna regret my life unless I just find true freedom in myself, and scope out every aspect, every religion, every thought, everything, like open my mind as wide as possible and then make an assessment as opposed to just learn, you know, go off what I was taught.
Interestingly, you mentioned guilt there, and I think that's really the reason I found the church organized religion not for me, and why I unfortunately, and I feel a bit sad in myself about this, I've not taken my daughter to church yet.
Right.
I do want her to experience that, but I just think that there's a dogma that feeds on guilt such that you then censor who you are. And I feel like it affected, even after I stopped going to the church, you know, like even, you know, well into my 20s, possibly even until into my 30s, I spent a lot of time feeling guilty.
Yeah, yeah.
Which just is so wrong.
It's
guilt
the wrong
is
way around.
Such an, oh my God, it's like a destructive emotion
totally.
That doesn't serve anything.
Totally.
Doesn't serve you, doesn't serve the people you're interacting with.
No.
It's so damaging.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I had been free of that, I would have been much more effective in my life.
Definitely.
You know what I mean?
Again, it comes back to that risk thing. I think a lot of religions are great from their intrinsic heart, like Jesus and like Muhammad thought everything Jesus did was super cool. And I feel like all the messengers or all the greats, all the holy men of and women, we all had the same, exact same thing. And I swear down, we're all identical. I think my conviction of it was that it's not totally true, because I came to an epiphany myself through, like, after leaving the church and then going through getting pretty mentally ill and physically ill. I came to this place where I had just an authentic realization that I'm loved no matter what I do with my life by an omnipresent divine energy, spirit, God, universe, love, whatever you want to call it. I've had so many incredible experiences of that since, where it's no longer a faith for me. It's actually just like, this is as real as you in front of me right now. That those experiences in that spirit, and it's getting proven more and more through frequency, like in science and all this kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, I feel like our civilization as a species, I'm incredibly disappointed with how we're run. Like, and I feel like there is a need for more spirit in us.
Yeah,
as a culture.
I don't think we're going on the right track.
You know?
As a human race.
No.
No, I don't think. Well, you know, what we've done to the planet isn't great.
No.
And that's heading for disaster.
And what about all the subtle ways in our media and mainstream that breed like iconic energies like self worry and or anxiety and fear and all these things?
Yes. Yeah.
But they've been taught over the year. That's why I'm doing a lot of research at the moment. This is what I find fascinating, is that a lot of these things are have been talked about for centuries, and ancient cultures were so in tune with the land, so in tune with our environment and each other's energies, that we've just severed that connection hugely. And it's, the more research you do, the more I get freaked out about how the powers that be and the governments and the transnational corporations are actually purposely dumbing us down.
That's a pretty big statement. Can you explain more?
From everything from advertisement to it's a huge, it's just, I think anyone that I've educated me on this stuff, I've just backed it up with do your own research. And I've been doing my own research and listening to a lot of these people that are incredibly intelligent, both mentally, physically, spiritually, and, well, not physically always, actually.
Not necessarily physically so crash hot. Okay.
No, not physically strong. But the headline from it I've learned is that we are, like, so much more powerful than we're taught. And that's the headline, really. Like, in terms of we're gods of our reality, we can create our reality.
Okay, so I have to reference now Russell Brand, right? Because I've read his book, Revolution.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It?
So okay. Good. And a lot of what you're saying kind of reflects that book. And I do want to get onto why, in a way, you kind of reflect what he has said, because you have a personal connection with him. Mm. But having read that book, I sort of thought to myself, because I at the same time was doing I Quit Sugar.
Yeah.
And that was sort of more from a dietary point of view. But as I was reading Russell's book, which is all about how we are controlled by multinational organizations and our governments who are in cahoots.
Yeah.
I sort of thought too, you know, it's done through our diet in a lot of ways, because sugar,
absolutely,
which we are all addicted to, basically makes us unmotivated, lazy.
100%.
Consumed with whatever disease our body chooses to create because we eat too much sugar.
Yeah.
It's an addiction that we all have. And trust me, I've gone back to sugar. You know? I have pancakes for breakfast.
Yeah, great.
And I've done it consciously.
Yeah, good. You're very mindfully eating sugar now.
That's right. I know what it's doing to me. But I think,
and you're counteracting it with your intellect.
I'm trying. But the thing is, I feel like all of our sort of contemporary society, it does exist to nullify us and to make us lazy and unmotivated, and so that we won't ever say, hang on, that's not right. And the few people who do say, you know what, I don't want our governments to turn away asylum seekers. I don't want our governments to say no to a carbon tax, or, you know, sort of an emissions scheme, or whatever the things that are important to you. There's so few people who are willing to rise up, because most of us are just kind of lazy because of what we're fed.
Exactly. What we're fed food-wise, nutrient-wise, as well as, like, subtly, advertly, subliminally, it's all affecting us. And it's not something, what I've learned, it's not something to be scared of. Like, I've gone through phases of just being, oh my God, like, I'm scared for our people as a species. Like, this is horrible. And it freaks me out when I think about how big and dark these energies are. But then I always come back to that center part of myself, which is connected or is allowed to be a channel for peace and love. And just connecting with that, that's the only way.
Yeah, because that's sort of what I've come back to, is that my role is to spread empathy.
Mm.
And I'm hoping that if all as many people right. can be that, then eventually it'll be sort of, you know, just, you know, Mercury just gradually sort of connects
yeah.
to itself.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I imagine hopefully we can all kind of connect to ourselves and make that change if I can raise my daughter the same
yeah,
way.
Yeah, great. And it happens. Like, I see it happening. I see people, like, I was praying in the morning where when I came back from my trip and I was, like, praying for more awakened souls and spirit, you know, people that are just connected, just connected.
Mm.
And then later in that morning, I bumped into you and I was like, man, that's for sure happened for a reason. Like, that's an answer to, that's the universe's answer or however you want to phrase it. And then a few days later, I had like one of the most stressful days at work because I've been doing some long hours and I felt my like whole body, like a bunch of like bads happened. And then I felt my whole body just like resonating with anger and not anger, sorry, just like just bad energy.
Yes.
And within a couple of hours, three incredible things happened. Like one of them was you like saying, oh, let's catch up and do this podcast. One of them was Russell writing me a really lovely email about how we hung out and chatted and the things we talked about. And then one of them, and doing more work for me as well. And one of them was something else. Like I just suddenly thought about you, and I was talking to my friend about you. Like, I felt like you could say that's coincidence, or you could call it whatever. But it just feels real to me that that was just my energy, like doing, you know, going around the world somehow for the people that I've connected with in one way or another, and then responding, really. And I feel like through healing or whatever, however you want to phrase it, it sounds like hippie and crazy, but. It's not. It's just real.
It's real. It's real. Yeah. It's your real experience.
It's my real
experience. Yeah. So you mentioned Russell there, and also you mentioned your trip. And these are two things that we need to explain.
Okay.
Because they are interconnected, but it began with this trip that you took, this extraordinary kind of finding yourself epic
yeah.
odyssey that you went on.
Yeah, 6 months of just like making up as I go. I just bought one ticket at a time, just travelled wherever and whenever I felt like it. With the main intent to just grow and evolve my everything, like physically, just working out lots, and spiritually, just exploring and understanding and reading and talking to people and knocking down as many barriers in my mind as possible. It felt like just I went into it with a very open mind and a very open heart.
That's extraordinary. I mean, a real gift that you're able to do that. Not many people can just up and go.
Yeah, we all can. Everyone can if they want to. We're all got the ability.
How would you suppose I'd do that? With my daughter and my husband.
I don't know. Look, I don't know the limits of everyone's.
No, I think you have to acknowledge that's true. A bit of a privileged position.
No, that's true. I was very
that.
Lucky.
Yeah.
That's true.
That it also, because I'm so different in that experience, in my life experience, I followed your journey on Facebook and I kept thinking, I would be in a constant state of anxiety in and around, what if I haven't found somewhere to stay?
Yeah.
Or...
It was.
Yeah?
It was. Like, and then I just learned to deal with it by going, all right, well, worst case scenario, I just call up a backpacker and rock there. Or worst case scenario, I just don't sleep. Like, yeah. you just throw yourself into, you take a risk, throw yourself into a new environment and deal with it. And the more you do that, the more, like, that's how I love living. Because that's how, when I feel alive, like, swimming in the dark outside, like, in sharky water, in St. Lucia under the Pitons, which are these beautiful volcanic mountains, just diving off there without a care in the world, just feels so liberating because it's basically throwing caution to the wind and you never feel more alive than you do when you are in those moments and more connected, yeah. more like it's not insanity. It's not I'm not chucking myself in front of a car or anything. I wouldn't do anything stupid like that.
No, I'm not suggesting you are. It's amazing. I guess...
Man, that time you saw me swimming with the dolphins in the freezing water.
You were not swimming with the dolphins. You were trying to catch the dolphins. There was a pod of dolphins out in the middle of the bay.
Dirty Port Phillip Bay.
Yeah, in St Kilda. And I saw this crazy dude just strip off on the beach and swim out to the dolphins as if you were going to somehow catch them. And in actual fact, it was you.
Yeah. You didn't know who it was in their underpants.
No. But... No, look, I think that's an amazing thing. I love that spirit in you. Mm. You're very impulsive. And I think we squash our impulses. We become adults.
Mm.
And I love that in my daughter. I see her as a six-year-old. She just does what feels right in her imaginative play.
Yeah.
Right now I'm going to do this. Right now I'm going to start dancing. Right now I'm going to get in the sandpit and, you know, suddenly I'm on a ship or whatever it might be. You know, it's amazing. And you have that in you.
Yeah.
I think that as adults, it'd be lovely to try and
We lose that connection with that. Because we're taught and we're fed ideas of like fear and this will happen, go wrong. But and you know, I also learned that growing up that it's selfish, like what we said before, Christian, it's selfish to do what you want. And now I feel like it's not, I don't feel like it's selfish. It's just true to my intuition or like, and it's, and I'd never want to hurt or harm anyone. Once you're connected to this energy of love or whatever it is, of course it's not selfish because you're wanting to be a channel or a vessel for that to live through.
Mm. It's interesting that concept of selfish too, because, you would think if you want to do what you want, then that's to the detriment of others or to the exclusion of others. But in actual fact, what you want is to make other people happy as well, like to spread the love, to use a cliche term.
Yeah.
So then what you want is serving other people as well, totally. Surely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so you mentioned Russell there and you are referring to Russell Brand. Well, how on earth did you end up in, you know, as... Would you say a friend of Russell Brand's?
Yeah, I feel like I'm friends with everyone. So
of
yeah.
course. You are, Jez. It's so true. You are.
So everyone's a friend too. Yeah. Really. But yeah, I just was emailing him for about a year because I wanted to, ever since he started doing Trues, which is like True News on YouTube, I was like, I just want to help with that cause that resonates with me and I feel like I want to work. And I've always found him funny too.
Yeah.
And he grew up in a similar part of town to me. It's out like Southeast London. So I think, I just reached out to him a bunch, emailed him and his manager. We've been in correspondence for about a year before I bumped into, when I got to London, I hit him up again. And yeah, a bunch of back and forth, kept falling through. Then one day I just bumped into him in Shoreditch and he just he knew who I was from my name because I was at Hamish and his producer. He's like, you're Jeremy.
Yeah.
And then we started chatting. Then I started hanging out with his PA a bit, and he introduced me to her. And then me and her started becoming mates and going out. And yeah, and I had a bunch of ideas that I wanted to do to, in terms of my skill set, what I thought I could do to help.
Sure.
Help it push his brand out more and stuff in different ways, like Instagram and that. Mm. And then I just started doing that with him and still do it. Yeah.
So I love that. I think that's a really amazing lesson that if you have a dream, let's say.
Mm.
A dream is a sort of a funny term that I've...
Nah, it's a great term. We can't be shy of these things.
No, well, I guess I've never really sort of associated with having dreams. I didn't grow up with, I've got this big dream of being something or other.
Yeah.
But let's say, I love this as a lesson that you had set yourself this goal that you wanted to work with on Trues, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But then you actually took active steps to do that. And I think a lot of people feel like, I would love to do that, but then they don't actually do anything about it.
Right.
And there's no kind of sense of, actually, nothing is impossible. You just got to set out the path for yourself.
Absolutely. And be patient and be fully loving and accepting of yourself and anything else as well. There's a huge... you're right, you just got to take active steps, but mostly you just got to do what you love and not see that the goal is the destiny, you know, that you only be happy. That was my hardest lesson, that I thought I'll only be happy once I reach my dream. But I found like an authentic realization that now is as good as it gets, this moment is as good as it gets, everything else is an illusion.
This moment, Jez, it's pretty good.
It is good.
It is really good.
Looking at your eyes, sparkling, got a fluffy bone in our hand, microphone.
That's the microphone you're referring to.
Yeah.
You mentioned looking in my eyes. Is it too soon to do this?
No, blow it. Let's play that.
Because I read this thing about 20 years ago, a psychologist called Arthur Aron succeeded in making two strangers fall in love in his lab.
Mm.
Okay, now crazy. This just blows my mind. Is it possible to fall in love? Once you fall out of love, can you fall back in love? Imagine the implications.
What is love? The great question.
Oh, yeah, I can't go down that path. But imagine the implications for, you know, divorce if what he's telling is true, is that you can't actually fall in love with someone.
Totally, because it's just connection.
Deliberately. Okay. Yeah. So his theory was a bunch of things like, you know, strategies that you do to get to know each other. But one of the things he said is if you sit and look at each other in the eyes without diversion, for 4 minutes.
4 minutes is a long time. Like I did it. I was doing this the other day just for fun because I like it's a gateway to the soul without a doubt. Like once you look in pupils, you just like, man, you get lost.
Yes.
And And it happens if because it's vulnerable. It's so vulnerable.
Yes, it is very vulnerable.
And it's so people can't handle it.
I'm also I'm starting to feel like I wish I hadn't brought this up because it's going to be weird.
It is weird. Maybe we just do 30 seconds.
No.
Our energies, I reckon, it'll take us 10 seconds.
I think we have to do the full 4 minutes, right?
Far out.
Do you dare? What if you accidentally fall in love with me, Jess?
I'm already in love with you.
Oh, you are not.
I'm in love
you're in love with everyone.
Yeah.
It's lovely. And I'm in love with you too. Always have been. Ever since.
So we're talking about different connections.
We are.
That's where, again, in this article because you sent it to me, is the that when you choose to fall in love, or you, I think that's when you're in a relationship, that's when you have to make choices to feed the love as opposed to choices to feed the, you know, negative things.
Yeah, you're right. Yes, you can choose. You can choose to make a statement or say something to someone that is destructive or building them up.
Mm.
Those sorts of choices.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So should we try it?
Yeah, let's try it.
So let's do like stream of consciousness. I can't say it.
Yeah, good.
We have to act because obviously this is...
So we're not allowed to talk. We're going
to
talk.
Audio. No, we have to talk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
Because otherwise...
Go on. And...
What are people going to listen to? Okay.
Yeah.
So you just have to say whatever you're thinking or feeling.
I reckon it's going to get pretty edgy.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm already scared. Just because I don't know what's going to happen, but I know it's going to get real.
Okay, so I'll time it here. On my phone.
Okay.
Okay, 4 minutes.
And so we're not allowed to look anywhere else but the eyes. What if we avert? We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Can't avert.
We're not allowed.
Oh, but if you avert, you have to say why.
All right.
And then is it called off if one of us averts or do we go back
and
to
what
it?
If, so the outcome of this, if we fall in love, that's bad though because we can't fall in love.
Well, I'm very happily married.
Exactly.
So... we've been talking about let's not be risk averse, so let's just go.
Yeah.
I tell you what, Jez, the reason I'm confident that we'll be okay is that you are a very attractive, how old are
30.
You? 30. Yeah, a very attractive 30-year-old guy. You have plenty of other women to fall in love with than me.
I fall in love with everyone.
That's my point. But all I'm saying is that, you know, your love for me might last until we walk out of this room.
Yeah, that's not real. That's not real. You know what? Man, one thing, I can only connect with specific people. I'm not bad.
Are you saying something nice to me now?
I'm trying to be, like, I connect with some people, I don't connect with other people. I'm not, that's what I'm saying. Like, so, I'm not a connection slut.
I get it. Yeah, I'm not suggesting that you're some kind of, you know, crazy sort of, because I think some people can be,
I've got a compass.
No, I agree. And I think some people who you come in contact with, oh, wow, they're really enlightened. And then you go, no, actually, they have a mental illness. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
You know, there's a fine line.
Yeah. Oh, I was meant holy people are the craziest people because they've reconciled their opposites between good and bad in themselves. They realize that the evil they see in others is the evil they have in themselves, same as the good.
Yeah.
So they usually come across pretty unhinged, but they're so free.
Yes, it's
so
true.
Free
and sometimes
they've conquered.
Freaky. But
free.
Okay, you ready? We're going to start our 4-minute experiment of looking deep into each other's eyes.
All right. We've already started early.
Diversion, okay, and see what happens. It's supposed to make us fall in love. Okay.
Go.
All right. See? Now I'm looking at you. You look a little bit crazy.
Yeah. Are you looking into my left eye or my right eye?
Well, right eye.
I'm doing to right to right, so my right's to your left.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. When I'm tired, my left one sometimes wanders.
You have got a little wandering eye.
I can make the other one wander on purpose like that. See that?
That's freaking do that to me.
It just kills the cam.
It does a little kill the cam. Okay. I saw a thing, an amazing thing.
Yeah. I feel like it's more powerful when we don't talk.
Oh, okay.
But we can't not do that. But so what was the thing you saw?
Oh, well, I saw this woman who was doing an installation in a gallery as I look deeply into your eyes and think, you've got very, very dark pupils.
Have I?
Yeah.
You're looking at my left one right now, not my right one. Is that because it's not looking at you?
No, it is looking at me. Are you looking at me?
I think so. Yeah. Sometimes when I'm really tired like I am at the moment, though, who knows where they're looking.
No, I'm looking in your right eye now.
Yeah,
is that better for you?
Yeah, you'd rather because that feels like your left to my right and it's parallel tracks.
Sure. Okay. So this woman was doing installation in a gallery. The installation was she was just sitting sort of silent at a table and people would come and they would sit in front of her and look directly in the eye with her for as long as they wished.
Cool.
That was the installation.
Cool.
And this thing was, this guy sat down opposite her, and for some reason their connection was so deep, she started to cry.
Wow.
And he started to cry. And he...
Without saying anything, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I feel I believe, of course that would happen. Because I reckon I was even doing it the other day with someone, and I was like, because I was like, look into my soul, I want to look into your soul. And you come within like...
Were you on a date? Minutes.
No, just my mate.
I was going to say, because that would be terrifying. Yeah, yeah. On a date.
I would do it on a date though as well. But, and then I was like, this feels so vulnerable.
You've just looked away then, by the way.
Yeah, but that's because I see, that's because we're talking. And I'm,
okay,
but
all right.
For a glimpse, it was a glimpse, I'm sorry.
Okay, let's concentrate.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like we've like saturated our moment because we talk, if we wanted to do this proper.
All right, let's try 30 seconds not talking because okay. I can edit that.
Okay, yeah, you can edit
that. See what happens.
Go on in.
Okay.
It's about off.
Stop it.
It's
about off. Okay, okay.
It's scary, isn't it?
Can you? You see, you can't not talk. That's it.
Yeah.
It's hopeless.
No, but that was good, though, wasn't it? How intense was that? Just like for 10 seconds.
Yeah, it was. It was
as
intense.
Soon as you stop, as soon as you stop talking, yeah. It gets fucking intense.
It's yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah, in a good way.
No.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you know. What do you learn from being silent?
For me, it's just connection. Yeah. I feel like that's if you wanted to. It's like it's better than a handshake.
Better than
just, eyeballing someone. Real close. Again, just not to keep throwing back to him, but that's something that I find so funny about how Russ engages with people.
Oh, he does look you right in the eye.
He looks you right in the eye, and he kind of swivels his head like a snake to try to dig into your soul.
You know him personally. I've interviewed him a couple of times.
Yeah.
And when he has done that, the way I feel, I don't know.
It unsettles you?
It feels like he's intentionally trying to unsettle you.
Yeah, and I think he is.
Yeah, which I think when you're in an interview situation, sometimes you feel like people are defensive or a little bit combative the minute you walk in.
Yeah.
And that gaze, I think sometimes, it's like looking straight at it. Is it dogs? You're not supposed to look straight at the eye or something?
But you know what? Unsettling's good. Like, I'm not saying unsettling's bad because I think like he does it with great intent. His intent is to... you know, like ruffle the feathers and because you're only forged in fire, you only like create through chemistry.
Yes.
You know, like, and I it's all these beautiful intentions that is where it's coming from.
What about music? I came across this other amazing thing that just blew my mind.
Yeah.
The concept of a skin orgasm.
Yeah. Love that.
Okay, so I read this amazing story about a psychologist, again, who's done some study into the effect on music on your brain and on the fact that it can alter your mood to the point where you can have what they called, well, it's called musical frisson.
Right.
But it amounts to basically the same kind of physical reactions to orgasm.
Crazy.
Crazy.
So just the... What, a really good euphoric moment in a track.
Yeah, so it can be like, you know, that spine tingle or, you know, sort of like when you feel goosebumps, that kind of sensation. Mm. But they've actually, in some of their studies, they've had people report sweating, flushing, sometimes sexual arousal.
Wow.
From really, you know, the kinds of music that has great highs and lows. And, you know, because, you know, music can manipulate your mood a great deal. Yeah,
100%.
And they said that it releases dopamine, which is the neurotransmitter in the brain that is your pleasure center, basically. So dopamine is released when you have, you know, great food, great sex, when you set yourself a goal and you actually achieve that goal, that will release dopamine as well. And there's lots of different things that linked to dopamine, like pleasurable activities, exercise, but music. I love this because I can remember times in my life where I've gone to a concert or heard something amazing and it's
the emotion of it though, right? Is that what it is? Or is it the actual
frequency? Well, it's a physical
reaction to
the sounds.
Yeah. I reckon it's probably half the fact that we respond to the emotions of the lyrics and the frequencies, but also because we're made of 80% water and water is proven to react to frequency ranges. Like, it actually resonates and creates different patterns if you put, like, water on a piece of metal plate that shakes at certain frequencies. As you change the frequencies and goes up, the pattern of the molecule gets more and more complicated. And they're sacred geometric patterns.
Yes, geometric.
And so, of course, we know it because we feel it as well, but, like, there's science behind how music connects with us.
Mm. Have you ever had an experience like that? Like, I remember,
what was yours?
Oh, I've had it a few times where I felt like I wanted to cry from just the music of it.
Good.
So overwhelmed by how beautiful the music was.
Nothing to do with how the music...
Not the actual lyric, I don't think.
Yeah.
Well,
but you're thinking about a memory or something?
No. It's just I was overwhelmed by it. Like, wow. Once when I went to a U2 concert, it was just such an overwhelming emotional feeling that I just wanted to weep. It filled me, I think. Right. It was like it filled
and
my
you let
chest.
It?
And
you weeped?
I did not weep.
Didn't you?
No.
You wept?
I didn't weep. Or wept, no. I didn't, but I did actually once when I went to, I went and saw Verdi's Requiem, which is an...
I don't know that.
Like an operatic piece.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to play it.
Yeah, cool.
I got a bit of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
And listen, like...
all within, like, 5 seconds, how intense that is. It's so good.
You
I'm
should check that out.
On my cheeks.
Yeah, you should check that out.
Amazing.
But it's sort of similar to, I suppose, really hardcore dance music.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely something to be said for... I mean, there's proven... apparently, there's a frequency in bass that can make you poo your pants.
Oh, and that is the worst idea ever. Like, oh, my God.
But there's things just like that.
Please don't ever have me in a situation where I might accidentally shit myself because there's a bass that's going... Like, don't stand next to the speaker, dude. Like,
and there's one that makes you puke as well. Like, there's one...
Oh,
that
my
they
God.
Just summon... weird, like, because everything's sound. Like, there's all sorts of sound and light bouncing around that we can't comprehend, but it doesn't say that it's not there just because we can't see it.
No, I understand that, but yeah, so can you imagine being at a dance party and you just happen, or a concert, right, and you just happen to find yourself next to the speaker tower, and the next thing is you've shat yourself.
Yeah.
That's...
I would love to.
Like, horrific.
Yeah. I reckon they'd do it on purpose. I mean, you would be.
What? No. I mean, if they have the power to know what frequency it is, wouldn't you just avoid it? See, you wouldn't go there. That
it could be
horrific.
I don't know if it's 100% true, but I've heard it. I haven't heard it, but I've heard of it.
Okay, so have you ever had a similar, any kind of reaction like that to music?
Like, I love music. And, definitely. Like, a certain bass line would make my, I feel like my blood's literally pumping in rhythm with it. But, yeah, I get those reactions. Like, feel like it's pretty similar to, like, one time I was in South France and this girl I was really fancied. And she had a boyfriend, so I was like, could never act on anything, so I was very restrained all the time.
Right.
And then like, we hang out a bunch, and then, like, one time she just, like, oh, I was like, she somehow came up that she broke up with him a month ago. And I had instant all-in-body reaction, like...
Isn't
instant.
That just desire?
No, it's like, no, no. It's
think that's...
Nah, it's like, maybe it is. Maybe it is desire.
It sounds very much like desire. If you wanted to act on it and you couldn't, and then you found out that she'd just broken up with her boyfriend, surely that's you going, awesome, I can jump
on. But
it
was very physical, like everything flipped in your body.
And yeah, that's desire.
No, come on. Well, then it's desire when you hear a track that's talking about something, I don't know. I feel like it's a similar thing in the sense that your body's physical... metaphysical reaction to an external thing, be it music or be it something someone says.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're deviating.
Well,
and
yeah.
It's
that's
really
fine. I love it. Jez, it's just been delightful. I've really enjoyed always your time ever since I...
Likewise.
Tried to convince you that I wanted you to film the birth of my child.
I wanted to bring that up. That was so funny. So Joe, yeah, I was going to take photos of your childbirth, and I actually thought that you were being real, but I there's did, microphones
yeah.
under the desk.
Yeah, you need to know, in a million years, I would not have had someone film the birth of my child, but I did take you into a room, which was hooked up with microphones, hidden microphones, and ask you to photograph the birth of my child.
And me being wanting to be yes man was like, okay, yeah, sure. But, like, just not really wanting to, not properly tackling my emotional response to that situation, which was, holy crap.
Absolutely. Like, and the fact that I said to you, okay, I really want you to capture the moment that my beautiful child and her spirit enters this this living realm,
yeah.
which means the crowning. And yeah. you're like, what's that? Like, that's when her head will come out of my vagina. Yeah.
And I was almost going to do it. Then I went and pulled my boss in. I was like, man, Joe's just asked me to do this. I don't know what to say. Is that like... Anyway.
Oh, good times. Anyway, your divine has been fascinating to learn all about you. And thank you for being a part of the Unknown Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
Onward and upward. Let's change the world.
Yes. Positive. Thank you.